It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't help.
It was a real doubleheader of terrible. Hold on, yesterday. You got a little time to decompress after the Texans loss. If you root for the Texans and the Astros, a little break in between. Maybe you got some chores done, maybe cooked, and then got ready for the Astros, hoping against hope that they could salvage a game against the Mariners. That hope was kind of dashed pretty quickly. Astros lose 7-3, they lose the series, they get swept, and now they're a full three games behind the Mariners. Remember that Thursday, that Wednesday night to Thursday before the Mariners played, we're like, hey, look at us. We took the lead back because we took the Rangers apart. Now let's see if the Mariners can drop one against, what was the Royals? Was that the last game of the series? And then we come in. We could be a game up with the Mariners coming in. The Mariners won and kept winning, and they have almost locked up first place. Like, they got to fall apart. And the Mariners, at least this version of them, don't seem capable of that. They came in, I think, winning 11 out of 12. Because they had won 10 in a row, then dropped the game, and then won the final game of the previous series. And they continued that against the Astros. 4-0, 6-4, 7-3. The Astros were really never in it. Look, Pena hit the grand slam. And then, to their credit, they had two men on Saturday with the chance to win the game. Instead, Robles makes a great play. Jake Myers gets doubled up. And that was the end. And that continued into Sunday, where our guy, our hero, could not come through. That was tough. Watch him as he goes. I watched him go an inning and a third. Give up seven runs and seven hits. Didn't even make it out of the second inning. And
he was like Superman getting beat up by Ultraman controlled by Lex Luthor.
Yeah, and there was no overcoming that. His buddies couldn't help. Now, the bullpen did not give up a run the rest of the way, so
bright side.
Credit to them for cleaning it up and in some ways keeping the game not really in reach. But, hey, it's not 14-0 where Chaz is going to get out there and pitch or something like that. So
I think Carl Ravitch really appreciates it. Where it's like, all right, cool. We can just get out of here. They're not going to score like this every inning.
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah,
we can pack this thing in.
Yeah. How many stories did he have in his back pocket to be able to tell if this got to like 14-0? So it was over before it really began in yesterday's game, and then you've got Saturday night where look, Robles makes a great play. I don't know why Jake Myers is being waved around. Why? Yeah. I understand why he thinks that's going to get down, but it wasn't that important that you scored at that point. We just needed base runners. Look, maybe you put some pressure on the guy on the mound because you're within a run. Didn't turn out to be a good decision by him or the third base coach waving him around. It was just bad all around. They got bashed for three games. Never had a lead, right? Never. Did they ever lead in the series? Did they lead on Saturday?
Was the only one that they could have, and I don't think they did.
That's
no, they didn't.
A complete beating. Because you lose 4-0, Hunter Brown goes out there on Friday, pitches well, but not well enough because your lineup couldn't touch Brian Wu. And then on Saturday, Fromber is just Fromber, which used to be consecutive quality start after consecutive quality start. Now Fromber being Fromber is, he's going to be terrible again. The 4 2/3, 5 earned runs is just what he has been. And on Saturday, the Mariners are up 3-0, or actually 5-0, and then 6-0. And then their Astros tacked on the 4 to make it competitive thanks to the Pena Grand Slam. So, no, did not lead one half inning. Not one. That's how bad it was. And what do you say other than is this a team who should be in the spot because of how well they had played when all their guys were hurt? Like, look, the baseball gods did you a favor because the Mariners weren't good and you had played well enough to keep your lead with all the guys who are out. Unfortunately, outside of Yordan, all those guys have come back. Of course, other pitchers have gotten hurt, but the lineup is at almost full strength without Yordan. Paredes played, hit a home run over the weekend. Didn't matter. So what do we think? Are they making the playoffs? Do you even want them to make the playoffs? Once they make the playoffs, yes, you want them in the playoffs. But I wouldn't be mad at anyone who's like, you know what? I need the season to end. I want Fromber out of here. I don't want to have to deal with another one of his starts. You got at least one more. But if you were just tired of the season, tired of getting your hopes up for this team and then watching them fail miserably, that home series against the Mariners had to take a lot out of people. This was a chance to – you probably weren't going to sweep the Mariners, but if you win this series,
yeah,
you go into the final week of the season thinking you got a pretty good shot to win the division. And who knows where you land as far as the seeding is concerned. Now, as it stands, you're out of the playoffs, and this is by tiebreaker, so you're tied. Yeah. So, of course, if you go on to win games and if the Guardians can slow down a little bit and the Tigers continue to lose, who knows?
It's a lot like what we were saying, where the Mariners have to lose at some point, than they did.
But only once?
Yeah, only
once.
Then
they rip off 4 in a row, including 3 against
you.
Well,
then they got to play you. That doesn't count.
Well, that's true.
They got to play
you. But you wish it would have been a contest where you at least take one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Even taking one would have been helpful.
Yeah, it changes the complexion. Like, sure, it sucks that you lost the series, but if you take one, you got everything to play for as far as the division. Now you got to hope for a giant collapse.
Yeah, and we were talking about before the 6 games against the Rangers and the Mariners where it's like 3-3 is like avoiding disaster, 4-2 is like good, and 5-1 and better, it's like, let's not waste our time talking about this. I think 3-3, the way you got 3-3 isn't good. Actually, it's like kind of the worst way to get 3-3 out of there. Because now it's like, well, you're definitely not going to win the division. Or almost certainly not going to win the division. You'd need a collapse by the Mariners to win the division. And
of course, if you don't finish tied, then whatever. But
yeah, you had to finish better than them.
Better than them because they own the
tiebreaker. So they need to lose 4 games, basically.
Yes.
Four of their last six, yes. And now with the Guardians, I guess we didn't take into account, like, oh, yeah, the Guardians might not lose between now and the end of the season. But now you're not really getting the benefit of beating the Rangers because they're just another team that's chasing you down that was behind the Rangers.
Yeah, beating the Rangers ended their playoff hopes.
Yes, and the Guardians play the Rangers to end the season.
Yeah, so by that point, the Rangers could be completely eliminated and have nothing to play for.
Which
hurts you because the Guardians will have everything to play for. So, yeah, I guess we'll be taking the Silver Boot home and that's it, right?
Yep. It stays at Daikin.
Great.
Did they run out on the field with
No, it's not like one of the Big Ten trophies where they go grab it from where if the Rangers hadn't won it, they would grab it from the Astros dugout and just run around with it. It doesn't have that type of importance, though. No.
Well, that's all we got. And maybe the third wild card.
What a joy.
We need some help, though.
Yeah.
We need some help for the third wild card.
Even in your own control. The Guardians, because of how hot they've been. But they did lose. But if we go by the Mariners after being on a long winning streak, they'll just rip off 4 in a row anyway. Because the Mariners had won 10, dropped the game, won the finale of their previous series, and then took the Astros apart piece by piece, game by game.
And I hate to even have to entertain this because I back in my day as an Astros fan, I didn't concern myself with the actual playoff seeding.
No, it wasn't a concern at all.
But I'm assuming the third wild card plays the third division winner. I'm just assuming that that would make the most sense, right? And then the top two wild cards play each other?
As I look at it right now, it would be top wild card versus last wild card, 3-6.
Really?
And then they would play the Mariners. The Jays would get, because the Red Sox and the Yankees are the 5 and the 4, the Jays would get, at least on its face, the worst of the teams remaining, because the Tigers would be the 3 seed.
So they set it up for the division.
Yeah, unlike football, where they will look at the seeding after the round reseed, and reseed. Yeah. This one is like bracket, like NCAA tournament.
Okay, so the Astros would play a wild card team.
Yes,
as the third wild
as the third wild card, they would play the best wild card. Yes.
Okay.
And then they, if they do that,
so that's the Yankees. Right now?
No, the Tigers are the third wild card.
No, they're the central winner.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. As it's set up right now, I looked at it all wrong. The Tigers are the central winner. The Astros would play them.
Okay, so you do play the division. Yeah. And that might be, so that's either the Tigers, who beat you last year, or the Guardians catch them because they're one game back and they're the hottest team in baseball.
Yeah, sorry, I read that all wrong. Tigers, the Astros, if they finish sixth, would play the worst of the division winners, yes.
Okay, sick. Love that.
Awesome.
Love this. So, Tarek Skubal or the Red Hawk Guardians.
So we got a taste of Skubal last year and didn't like it.
No. Ugh. Well, but maybe playing in Comerica Park.
Nah, Dimetapp is still Dimetapp no matter where you drink it. Got that medicine. Don't like it. It's one of the worst medicines ever. I'm trying to think. My dad had a couple he would give me when I had a cough. It was Dimetapp and then some kind of greenish one that was even worse. Or was that Robitussin's not great either, to be honest with you. Tylenol was always king. If you're talking about, hey, give me the good stuff.
Yeah.
The one that tastes the best, Tylenol was always
Tylenol PM, please. Well, I want to fall asleep.
Put me to bed. Think of just how life works. When I was a kid, never wanted to go to bed. Now I'm like, let's go. Let's give me the nighttime stuff.
Help me out.
Give me the nighttime stuff.
Give me some NyQuil.
Yeah, 2 p.m. Give me the NyQuil. I want to go to bed. Dimetapp was awful, and so was Robitussin. Bad memories. It's like the worst thing that happened to me when I was a kid. Look, I had a very pretty nice childhood. You know, come from a broken home, whatever, but had both parents. Not everyone can be as lucky. Medicine at my dad's house, make you want to live with your mom. Because my mom had the Tylenol. My dad had the stuff. Like, this is for adults. You're going to drink this.
Those were our problems back in the day.
Yeah,
now we have to watch the 2025 Houston Texans and Astros.
Well,
that's our problems.
Well, yesterday was like, hey, we're gonna the chaser is the Dimetapp to the Robitussin. That was yesterday.
Yeah, Robitussin in the morning.
Yeah, and then you got the chaser with the Dimetapp. Ugh. Texans and then Astros back to back. The little break in between. Hope you guys took advantage of that break.
Take a shower.
Whatever you had to do to get over the Texans game, just to get yourself ready for an Astros disaster. Where they're like, you know what? We're not even – we've said this in the past. I do appreciate when they let me know they're not going to win the game very early. That's what they did yesterday.
That is true.
Unfortunately, it was our hero. But, hey, don't even worry about this one. This one's out of hand. Don't get your hopes up.
You can go back to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Chiefs.
If you want to watch an awful football game, Chiefs Giants, you can. I'm sure there's something on SEC Network, the best game of the weekend you can watch, something like that. And Rewind, I'm sure it's there for you. Maybe you want to catch up on Task before the latest episode on HBO. You had your options because the Astros weren't giving you much to root for, and certainly the Texans didn't either. All right, we'll go to break with that. We had Eric call in about the Longhorns, of all people. We didn't really touch on Arch and the Longhorns. Arch was good. I don't care that much about him squaring up against the prone Texas or Sam Houston State defender. His mom did. His mom didn't like Arch doing that. But hey, however you can get your mojo back, that's fine. You got one more week too, because Texas in their own line is better than Auburn's. But the 10 sacks, setting a school record, Oklahoma did in sacks. Get it together, Arch. You got one more week. And let's see. Let's see. If,
two more weeks before that.
Well, one more game.
Yeah,
before,
one more game.
One more game before that.
Another tune-up.
Another tune-up to get yourself ready for a nasty Oklahoma defense.
Actually, the Florida defense is good enough.
It's good, too.
It's a tune-up for the Texas defense. Like, hey, you know, get those hands ready.
Just,
make sure to wear gloves.
It's true.
Lagwell will throw it to you.
Or he is so concerned because of what he did, he just stops throwing the ball altogether anywhere near anyone, which is what happened against the Canes. Yeah, you got Florida, a good defense who may or may not be broken. They may be sick and tired of propping up a team who can't score.
Wait, yeah, let's get some redshirts. Let's get some, you know what? I'm preserving my eligibility and entering the transfer portal. Let's get some of that.
That is very possible. But so Texas has, it's crazy and insulting, but true, the call Florida tune-up, but that's what they are right now as Texas gets ready for the Red River Shootout, because that's what we'll call it here, with Oklahoma. That didn't appear to be a game that I was going to care about before the year. And then Venables in that defense, and then Mateer as well, have gotten it done. So that's in the future. We'll talk some college football when we come back. Mostly because I want to laugh at Clemson and also Syracuse, because not because of the Angeli injury. I'm not morbid, but they got fined for something that the SEC put a lot of focus on. But the first ACC team or the first team to catch it is an ACC team. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Just to emphasize before we move to college football, what Fromber has been, these numbers compiled by Brian McTaggart. Fromber 1-7. With a 6.16 ERA in his last 10 starts, the Astros, in the exact opposite way that Jason Alexander has been our hero up until last night, the Astros, when Alexander's on the mound, they win. When Fromber's on the mound, they lose. Last 10 starts, they're 1-9. And for the most part, it's not about, hard luck Fromber as far as run support over the last 10 games. This has been... You stink.
He would need a lot of runs.
Yeah, we're
support.
Talking, hey, he's going to need six.
He's going to need a touchdown
over the
from
course
you guys.
Of the first five innings for him to get a win. It has not been hard luck, Fromber. He has been a big problem. And once it's over, we're in the middle of it right now, and people have certainly turned, and in some ways, certainly rightfully so, because it's not just about his performance. It's about who he's been outside of the actual results. I don't know how people will respond once he's someplace else. I do feel like this one can be long-lasting because I don't know if an Astros has gone out. Like, Tucker struggled, but all the – maybe Tucker's attitude was about perception. We didn't see Tucker be a problem.
It's because he didn't have the Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman personality of, like, vocal leader. He just kind of looked like he just –
people
quietly
thought he
went
was
about
aloof
his way.
And just played ball. It wasn't a guy who you could maybe relate to because there wasn't much to know about Kyle Tucker, at least what he wanted to reveal.
Guy.
Yeah, it's not a thing. No negative. He just didn't reveal much of himself. He just went out there and tried to ball. Now, he left with some poor playoff performances, but nothing to the status where you're going to see a guy go from hero, and Fromber is one of the best – couple pitchers in baseball, at least in the belief of Astro fans, to a guy who once he's out, everyone's going to be happy he is out.
Yeah.
And actually are probably praying the Astros don't give him any deal.
They're definitely – the Astros – like the day he signs and like the terms come out from Jeff Passan or whoever, there'll definitely be some like clowning on whoever –
the team who does
– yeah, whoever commits. Imagine committing $150 million
to this guy.
Yeah. Which, by the way, what – 2 months ago, we were saying $200 million. Now, I did the math. I'm like, I need to shave some millions.
Is the
off.
Back half of the season going to drop $50 million off his total deal? I don't know.
I think it doesn't change, or maybe It's a little bit lightens the AAV, the annual value, but I think what it really chops off is like he's not getting the 8-year max free deal, no. Or he's getting 4 or 5.
It's something he would have probably looked for in the market. Don't see that being something he's going to grab. Not after what we've seen over the last 2 months or so. Okay, so Astros have the day off, much needed, I would say.
Lick their wounds.
Yeah, whatever it takes to recalibrate and see if you can close out this season strong. All right, what we had over the college football weekend. We had a game in Norman where anyone who roots for Oklahoma was like, Jackson Arnold, we knew who you were. Look at you.
You can't fool me.
Overthrowing Jackson. Footballs, guys who were open, even underthrowing ones that could have been touchdowns, but the guy had to make a play to even make it complete. And it was shown throughout the first part of the season, if he can run the football, he can be effective. But as far as a guy throwing the football, it didn't help that he got sacked at times, certainly. But
no.
When he did have time, he missed some what you would consider layups for even average to good quarterbacks that would have gone for big plays. Because OU, as much as they could get after the passer, could not guard Coleman. And Arnold didn't take advantage of that.
And a lot of the talk from Auburn heading into the season was about two things, and neither of them were really Jackson Arnold. It was the offensive line. Hugh Freeze got up there and touted their offensive line. I think he said there's like 6 guys that are going to play in the NFL on their offensive line. Could have fooled me. Maybe they're Texans. I don't know. Maybe
Nick Caserios has his eye on all of them.
He's like, I like what I saw.
What are you talking about?
Some tools there. Yeah. Sure, they couldn't get a hand on R. Mason Thomas, but hey. There's some tools. And then the wide receivers. And the wide receivers are just being, like, absolutely wasted. I don't understand spending the kind of money it took to get Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton and then being like, you know who we're going to have throw the ball? Hopefully we get a transfer, and it turns out it's Jackson Arnold.
Yeah. Eric Singleton, the former Georgia Tech receiver now at Auburn. Cam Coleman is a guy who, if Jackson Arnold seems like the choice next year, the bag that Cam Coleman's going to get to go someplace else in his, if he performs well, certainly his final year in college, he's only a sophomore, that bag's going to be so large. I'm trying to think, Ohio State, man, what am I talking about? They'll just give that dude, like they have their own guys.
That's the only reason they may not do it.
Because Jeremiah Smith will still be there. I think Carnell Tate, I don't know if he's a senior, but Carnell Tate may not be there. Smith has to be there for one more year. So that might save Auburn from Ohio State coming to give him a bag.
Someone's
giving that guy a bag. Like, forget about it.
Yeah. So, Auburn, they look fine. I mean, we say all this, they did lose by 7.
Yeah. Like they got screwed on a call.
Yeah, they had the ball with theoretically a chance to drive down the field and win.
Jackson Arnold. So it's all theoretical.
No, oh my God. After the second play at that drive, I was just like, this not happening. Just not happening.
Not a chance.
No chance at all. I think they got called for a holding. I was like, they're not over. This is not an offense that's like, we're going to throw our way out of overcoming a holding call on second down.
Not when OU has no need to worry about you throwing or running the football. Like, Coleman was getting behind guys when it wasn't always obvious passing downs, because, you know, first and 10 from the 40, he can run by a guy because your coverage may dictate that you're going to play the run. Wasted. Just think. I don't know what it would have cost if Auburn would have paid Josh Hoover, the TCU quarterback, to come play there.
Yeah.
I only say that because of what he – partly he's a good quarterback, but also because what I watched him do with another big-time receiver I hadn't paid much attention to in Strickland. What he did over the weekend, Eric McAllister is the name. He's a transfer from Boise. This is his second year at TCU, but he could not be covered. TCU's pretty good. Now they whooped up on North Carolina early, but North Carolina stinks. But Hoover and McAllister, that's a combo that's going to give the Big 12 some problems.
Yeah. I mean, TCU looks for real. They just have the look of a team that's like, okay, this isn't just beating up on a bad UNC team. and now getting to play SMU. It's like, no, they look the part as far as a team that can really compete in the Big 12 and stock up Texas teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, let's go to Tech. Tech goes into Utah and Salt Lake, loses Morton, and look better. Like,
guess what? Him. We got another one.
Look better offensively without him. And
you know what? Here's two more for you.
Yeah. And that defensive front, the one, and look, it's a roster they paid a lot of money for. Texas Tech is in the game of they want to be good, and they know the way to be good quickly is to pay. And they've done that, and they went into a place that's very difficult to play, even if it is 10 a.m. in the morning there, and smack around a Utah team who had looked good up until they ran into Tech. So,
yeah. Tech is for it. Like, they're like, I don't know what they're actually ranked, but they should be, I don't know, top 10, 12.
At this point, I'll find it.
As far as how they look, because even before this game, they're just absolutely slaughtering bad teams, which. You know, you can't give a team a ton of credit for slaughtering bad teams, but that is what good teams do to bad teams.
Yes. It was now, Oregon State is not good. They got smacked over the weekend by Oregon. Of course, Kent State, one of the worst teams.
Yeah, and then Abilene Christian or someone.
Yeah,
like that.
Arkansas Pine Bluff. So not that far off as far as directional school names. FCS. Arkansas Pine Bluff, 67-7. Kent State, 62-14. Then they beat Oregon State 45-14. Then they go into Salt Lake and beat them 34-10. They're a 12th ranked team in the country.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're right. That's
about right for where they should be right now. And they play Houston. They come to Houston to play the Cougs in a little while, the undefeated Cougs.
Yeah, they'll have a bye week. And so that sucks for the Cougs that Texas Tech will have a bye. And then they come into town. And all of a sudden, that's a pretty nice matchup in the Big 12. The following week.
Yeah, Houston has Oregon State.
Yeah, that's a game. They have to go to Corvallis.
Yeah.
Don't know how many times Houston's played a game in the Pacific Northwest. I would not be surprised if it's the first time they've ever gone to Corvallis. I'll find that at some point. But that's a game, if we're just going by what we've seen, that's a game the Cougs should win.
Yes, they're not quite at the level of program where you're just
we just think
W.
Yeah, it's a Friday night. Oregon State is
worth
desperate, but that should be a game they should win Friday night in Corvallis. As I said before we went to break, there's a lot funny with the Clemson-Syracuse game. Not Steve Angeli. He's done for the year. The transfer from Notre Dame tore his Achilles. He's done for the year. So that's a tough break for Syracuse. But as far as the game itself, they were clearly the better team throughout. They got out to a big lead. Was there another delay in that one?
There was a lightning delay.
There's another lightning delay.
Clemson football, more lightning delays than wins so far this season.
Yeah, 1-3. They in Florida are 1-3. Dabo had a lot to say during the week.
They're close. No, wait, that's what D'Amico Ryan said.
No, he said, if you want to fire me, I'll go win some games another place. I don't know if D'Amico's going to say that at any point.
No, probably shouldn't.
Probably shouldn't.
I wouldn't suggest that, D'Amico.
Is it because he doesn't have two national championships in his back pocket like Dabo does? So he probably won't say that, but Dabo spoke a lot about where they were and who he is as a coach, and he goes, I'm just figuring things out. Someone said, maybe I haven't figured that much out. He goes, I got plenty of time to go. I'm 55 or whatever you said. I got plenty of time. Well, Clemson probably won't be firing you at any point. That'll be him writing his departure whenever he wants it to be.
He can look if he doesn't steer out of the skid, he can just look west, southwest. No, maybe just west to Oklahoma State. And like, oh, that's how it'll go down. If he's real about going down with the ship, that's how it's going to look.
I wasn't going to mention Ogie State today because they may make an appearance on a certain index tomorrow. Yeah, but Oklahoma State lost to Tulsa. But sticking with Clemson and Syracuse. Now, Syracuse wins. Feel great about themselves. And the ACC said, nice win, but we're going to hit you with $25K for one of the more embarrassing things in college football right now. And it was something that the SEC talked about throughout the offseason, and they have rules in place now. NCAA has rules in place. Syracuse got hit with the $25K fine for faking an injury.
Yeah.
The tape was reviewed, and they say, that's not a real injury. We're going to hit you with 25K. And I'm trying to figure out at what moment they thought they should have done it, considering how thoroughly dominant they were over Clemson, maybe after one of the Steve Angeli drives, or at least post-Steve Angeli, once he got hurt. Maybe they thought, hey, Clemson, put a drive together. We want to slow this down. So 20, that's the fine. You got hit with 25K for faking an injury. Now, they've done a lot so far. Syracuse, Fran Brown, after barely beating UConn, having his guys run sprints on the field after the game, he's got hit with the 25K fine. Fran Brown's one of those guys that opposing fan bases are going to hate if they don't already.
Right now, he's out in Syracuse kind of doing his own thing. If he ever gets like a SEC job or a big-time Big Ten ACC job, people are not gonna be thrilled by some of the tactics that Fran Brown uses, because he was – they're doing the injury stuff against Tennessee, too.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason they're the first ones to get, like, popped publicly with it, because I'd be surprised if he didn't get some sort of – like, they some shadow reprimand, like how baseball does it, where they send, like, a sealed letter.
Or you get away with it this one time.
Yeah, they're like, hey, this was a bad look. Like, stop this, or else we'll publicly take care of this.
So Klubnik got after them in the post game. And then apparently the play in question was two defensive linemen fell on the same play. So they couldn't even spread it out. It was too obvious. So I'm sure they looked to the sideline, some coach with a less than obvious go down signal because you got to hide it.
And then two of them. And two my of them favorite's took when, the bait. When two guys go down and then one of them notices that someone else went down, they kind of get back up. That always plays.
Yeah.
That's more of a linebacker move, I feel like. But yeah, it's something that should definitely be taken out of the sport.
So it was a 23-yard completion. They went down as Clemson was at the 9-yard line. They both hit the deck, and that's caught the eye of the ACC office. And they also work with the football national coordinator football officials. They reviewed it, said that's fake. You're fake, and you get hit with 25K. And it won't take away from their win. But it will become something people are very aware of. And, of course, the Clemson crowd booed. Now Syracuse is known for faking injuries. So,
every team is going to be.
We'll be pointing things out.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it is something they decide they aren't going to do anymore after being publicly embarrassed in some way. So that's the college football. A little glance at the college football weekend. We'll certainly get more in depth tomorrow with our misery index, because a lot of teams can look to be on the list. We only pick four. But I guess I already gave you a clue. Throw the Oklahoma State Cowboys squarely on the list. Yes. now there's only three.
It really is. The question will be, do they have high enough expectations to be number one?
Yeah. But losing to Tulsa at home, something they hadn't done in a very long time. And now they have to deal with Gundy. They already took money away from him in the last couple seasons. So he may not be a guy who gets to ride his own exit. We will see. And the final stat from the weekend, Nebraska loses to Michigan. That is 28 straight losses against ranked teams for Nebraska. And it gets worse for Matt Rhule. He, on his own resume, has 18 straight losses against ranked opponents. So while there is the talk of the year three bump for Matt Rhule, it's not because he's beating good football teams. Those bumps come from beating who you're supposed to beat, and that being enough for his program to have a good year. But Nebraska and Rhule, made for each other. Neither one beats good football teams. All right, we'll go to break with that. Probably only have one more segment to go, so if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. We will get into the NFL as a whole, do some more Texans, and then we're done with Rich Eisen up next. We'll be back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
I didn't want to get to this one college football thing before we moved on. So the SEC has released their annual opponents for each team with the new nine-game SEC schedule coming into play. And for the Longhorns, it's just back to the good old days in the Southwest Conference and throwing the Big Eight as well. Arkansas, A&M, and Oklahoma. Those are the three teams. Those are their repeat opponents. Some traditional rivalries taken off the board. Alabama no longer plays LSU, guaranteed every year. And they will play Auburn, Tennessee, and they got Miss State. So that's a break for them.
Yeah, if they just rotate the other six games that you play, I think you would still play them basically every other year or every third year. So you're still playing other teams pretty consistently. But yeah, these are the three teams that you play every year. And yeah, thank God the SEC preserved Mississippi State versus Alabama. Oh my God. What would we do without that? Remember how like every year that was just such a massive game that, you know, it was always the CBS. Actually, it wasn't even the CBS 230 game. They would bump it to 7 p.m. and we would get Alabama versus Mississippi State every year, same week, same time. Just a tradition. Oh, no, wait. That was the LSU game that they did that with, not the Mississippi State game.
So the format will be this. The three annual opponents, as I mentioned, and then six rotating opponents and an annual Power Conference or Notre Dame opponent. So along with playing each league team within a two-year span, the SEC teams will visit every other venue over the four-year span. So the point was...
Okay, so they do play every other year.
The point was not to have these big gaps between when teams play. Like, has A&M played Georgia more than once since they've been in the SEC?
The stat is Georgia still has not played a game in College Station.
Yeah, I know they went to Athens, but they still not...
And that might have been like 2020, too, yeah, where they expanded the schedule.
Fairly recently because of COVID, where they didn't want to play out of conference games. So A&M has never hosted the Bulldogs. That will change due to the schedules. Speaking of A&M, their annuals are LSU, Missouri, and Texas. I'm trying to find other rivalry games that maybe go by the wayside. So Georgia, of course, keeps playing Florida, but LSU no longer plays Florida every year. They'll play them every 2 years, and if you are a fan of watching Florida come to Baton Rouge, you only see that once every 4 years. So there are some things going by the wayside. They preserve what they believe to be the biggest rivalries, but some of the ones that have gained national attention throughout the years happen less often. They will still happen, but happen less often.
Yeah, I do wonder if they'll ever tinker with these to capture, but I guess they didn't really do that. They didn't go with like, this isn't a historic rival. This is just like games that have been really good recently. Yeah. So like Alabama LSU would be the example of that, where it's like, that's a very recent phenomenon as far as the rivalry. It's like basically Nick
Saban.
As far
as it mattering.
Yeah. Nick Saban going to Alabama and on is kind of when that mattered. I do wonder if they'll ever be like, you know what? These two teams have played in like three of the last four SEC title games, or you know, half of the SEC title games, and then played every year in the playoff. Well, let's tinker this. And sorry, Mississippi State, no more trips annual or every other year to Tuscaloosa. We're giving Alabama a real opponent.
I wonder how flexible they'll be with that. But
Alabama, get ready to play Vandy every year until you beat them.
Well, they'll have their shot this year coming up. Alabama, we talked about it. Alabama has Georgia up next, and then they have Vandy at home.
The ex Big 12 schools are very easy to figure out. That I feel like was the least controversial. They kind of get those on the board fast, because Texas, at least for Texas, like these like historic SEC teams, I don't care if play any of them. Half of them still haven't played.
True. I mean, there is other than. I think Texas is fine being in the conference. Who they're playing, sure. You want the big schools to come to town, but
yeah,
I don't know if the pull is why isn't Alabama more on our schedule?
Yeah, like it doesn't matter that specifically. Like the whole idea is yes, they wanted better home games, more or less. Well, they wanted more money, and part of that better home games. it really doesn't matter if it is Georgia coming to Austin or Alabama or LSU or Florida. It's just
not Kansas State.
Yeah, it's just one of those teams. Yeah. Give us one of those teams. And every year they'll play the Southwest Conference or the remnants of the Southwest Conference
and
that's
your old rival,
in this division.
And then your old biggest rival in Oklahoma. How it played out. Okay, so getting back to the Texans, a lot of talk about the offense and what can be done to fix it. If we're talking about how this team's going to go moving forward, I guess my biggest question is, do we believe DeMeco Ryans can fix it? Now, it'll come through a hire, and that is under the equation that where Nick Caley gets fired. And I don't think a first-year firing is off the table. The Texans, for the most part, have been very stable when it comes to when they believe in their coach. Like, they'll keep guys around. Like, DeMeco will stay. He's not getting fired. Of course, we had the 1 year of Culley and Lovey, but that was a period where they weren't trying to win. For the most part, they have been pretty patient with their head coaches when they believe this person is the guy. So, DeMeco, I'm not putting him on the table, but can Nick Caley go? If it's as bad as it's been.
Yeah, I mean,
I think he will go because the thought was, well, he's a young play caller and he could get a second year. You're at a point 3 years in where your quarterback is not progressing, and you have a question about his contract that you have to figure out. And is he your dude? You cannot allow a learning on the job play caller to fail as miserably as Nick Caley is right now failing. And once again, not all on him, but he is the OC. Someone has to carry the brunt of it, and it will fall on him. So the question is, even if DeMeco makes the decision a lot of people want right now to get rid of Nick Caley, is he someone you trust after two failed hires to go get the right guy?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think – so two things. A, Nick Caley 100% on the table to get fired, I would say – in season, in year one, because you look at Bobby Sloak. Bobby Sloak got fired after one bad year. Like, the first year, there wasn't a, well, you know, let's give Bobby Sloak another chance to learn. He's learning on the job. No, Bobby Sloak was interviewing for head coaching jobs. Like, he was viewed as a good hire after year one. So, Nick Caley has, like, have there been, like, back-to-back good drives for the Texans? Maybe the Bucs game?
The Bucs
the first
game.
Two and drives?
Touchdown, then field goal. On back-to-back drives. So
that's it? We have three games. We can point to two drives?
Pretty much.
And one's a scripted drive? Like, this is really, really bad stuff. That I mean, I don't know what the case for him to keep his job is other than, look at him. He's learning. Come on. Give him some time.
Not in the business of watching him learn.
Exactly.
So if you are assessing this Texans team for this year and the franchise moving forward, you have to ask, can DeMeco Ryans make the right hires? And if you believe he can, then your outlook on who they can be is probably more rosy than maybe you would assume at 0-3. If you do not believe he's capable, then certainly you have a problem with the direction. And then if you're right about it, they got a real problem with the direction, because this is not something you can live with for over the course of the next 14 games, because of how important getting the play caller right and making sure your quarterback is right, who he appears to be someone who game by game, it's a little worse every time we see him out there.
I would say DeMeco Ryans, the next OC that DeMeco Ryans hires, like, it has to be a guy with some established track record of calling plays in the NFL. Nope. Like, he's definitely lost the benefit of the doubt of identifying someone who's never done it before.
And then that comes to someone who has already failed. A lot of coaches do fail because you're not swiping some established good one from someone. So if you're not going the college route, it is some guy who's a quarterback coach, used to be a play caller, who had lost his job as play caller.
But even that, it's like, or, I'd rather have that.
Or it's the other option where he was a head coach, got fired, and for some reason is now a quarterback coach.
The Mike McDaniel dream that at least our intern Colton has.
Yeah. If that's your dream, hope this Dolphins season goes as bad as it appears to be going, and then you can hire him.
It's all we got.
That is the one established play caller option that could be available, it looks like. All right, we're done for the day. Rich Eisen is up next. So since we're done for the day, what does that mean?
Duval.
Had to give it to him.
It's unfortunate that he's 2-1 and we're 0-3. We'll talk to you tomorrow.